Alfie tweets, Alfie influences, and Alfie speaks. We are about to enter Cone's Zone. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
When Alfie Cone tweets, Busted Pencils retweets, and then, well, hey, look, if you follow Alfie on Twitter, you know that he typically uses it to promote something promising about teaching and learning or to bring to light something ridiculous. Well, on May 29th, it happened. Alfie tweeted a link to Education Week's new article, Teaching Students to De-Stress Over Testing. And if you follow Alfie, read his books, and visit his website, that would be alfiecone.org, you're probably thinking, hey, this must be a good piece. Testing sucks, it measures little to nothing of meaning, it's expensive, and it hurts more kids and teachers than it helps. A little less stress about it would be good. A method to de-stress would be awesome. Students and teachers, after 20 years of accountability-based high-stakes testing, are definitely due some relief in the form of less stress. So I did my part and I clicked Alfie's link and I began to read with deep intrigue about how to help teachers and students de-stress from testing. And by the second paragraph, I was introduced to PATHS, P-A-T-H small s, Promoting Alternative Thinking Strategies, a social and emotional development and anti-anxiety program for elementary students developed by Mark Greenberg, the chairman of prevention research at Pennsylvania State University. And then there it was, a kick in the balls. PATHS purpose? Do better on tests. You see, kids and teachers, they get anxious about tests that determine their future, and that creates a real barrier to optimum academic performance on high-stakes tests. Hey, what to do? Ooh, ooh, ooh! As Horshack used to scream, reaching his hand up to the sky, get rid of tests and send them down a different path? No, Horshack. Why would you get rid of the soul-sucking punitive tests? Why give up? Surely there must be a way to save the tests. Well, according to EdWeek, there is. There's an entire group of researchers looking into how to help kids de-stress before tests and use mindfulness-based meditation techniques. Now, at this point, if you know Alfie, this tweet was not promotional, but intended to point out how absolutely ridiculous our school's obsession with testing has become. Mindfulness to help students score better on tests and help teacher escape constant paranoia? No, this is not The Onion. I know you're thinking, but Tim, only The Onion would be clever enough to take the power of mindfulness-based meditation and a deep awareness of the array of mental health issues faced by school children and turn it into a fake news story about test scores. I wish it were true, because we do have students with serious mental health issues that need attention now, and mindfulness-based meditation would be an interesting way to possibly help children suffering from real anxiety, depression, and trauma. In fact, in Chicago, there is a small study going on where students who live in horrendous poverty in violent environments are being exposed to some areas of mindfulness meditation to see if it might help. No, not test scores, but curb school violence, help relieve generalized anxiety, and maybe even take an edge off depression, because living in constant trauma causes mental illness. So no, it's not The Onion, and yes, it is EdWeek, and yes, Alfie tweeted it. So if you're a teacher and the general well-being of your children is not at issue, and instead you find yourself panicking before, during, and after state testing, relax. Seriously, relax. Just find your path. That's promote alternative thinking strategies and simply de-stress the test. Oh, and all those real mental health issues? Maybe we can talk about those after the test.
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
He has been described in Time Magazine as, quote, perhaps the country's most outspoken critic of education's fixation on grades and test scores. He also writes and speaks widely on human behavior, education, and parenting. He's written 14 books, some of them Schooling Beyond Measure, and other unorthodox essays about education, The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Punished by Rewards, No Contest, The Case Against Competition, Unconditional Parenting, and The Schools Our Children Deserve. Welcome to the show, Alfie Cohn.
Thank you.
Man, so you've been at this for a while.
Yes, I have. That list only proves how old I am, not how prolific I am.
I brought my books, and they're sitting here, and even though this is a radio podcast, no one can see, I'm holding up just the small sampling of books I grabbed off my bookshelf before I came here. And I go right to No Contest, The Case Against Competition. And what's exciting and interesting is that you wrote that book in 1986.
I was 9.
I was going to say, how old, you know, you were 9. That book, I remember when that book came out. I am not going to even date where I was, but that book caused a lot of people to say, whoa, who's this guy coming out and talking about the fact that competition is a bad thing? Because those of us who grew up playing any type of little league sport or something like that, where it was drilled into us that it's competition that makes us who we are.
Yes, it's probably not a coincidence that that was my first topic that I took on, because it's just so rooted in our culture. Not only the frantic compulsion to beat other people, but the ideology that supports that compulsion, the belief that competition is desirable and inevitable, that it builds character, that it is necessary to achievement, and so on. And that was, I think, a good start in debunking assumptions that we so often take for granted. And what I loved about that project is that in order to address an issue like competition, the concept that I can succeed only if you fail, because the structure has been set up that way, you have to pull from the research literature in at least half a dozen different fields. And that style of interdisciplinary scholarship is something that I've always taken to, and that I think is useful for teaching children too.
Well, did you take a lot of flack from a bunch of guys and coaches and stuff that said, what are you talking about?
Oh, hell yes.
Okay.
I mean, I knew that was going to happen, of course. I'm criticizing competition at work, at home, at school, at play. I'm taking on something that's a part of our personal belief system, as well as our, you know, a staple of our economic system. It's built into the way our classrooms are set up, with spelling bees and awards assembly and grading on a curve. And it finds its way into our language with our own children. You know, okay, who can get the dishes dried fastest? Of course, there are basically two acceptable positions on competition in this culture. One is unqualified endorsement. It's what made our country great, et cetera. And then the other one is qualified endorsement, that says, well, maybe we get carried away becoming too competitive and cheating and pushing it on kids when they're still very young. But if we keep things in perspective and we don't overdo it, then, of course, some competition can be at least innocuous, if not virtuous and valuable. And based on hundreds of studies and having thought about it pretty seriously for a number of years, I came to the heretical conclusion that competition is inherently undesirable, that there is no safe dosage of it, and that there is no advantage, again, at school, at home, at play, at work, no advantage that you can't get without a competitive arrangement, either by pursuing goals independently of others, so they don't have to lose in order that you can succeed, or, better yet, cooperatively. And so that was and remains a very radical premise, not just to say that we overdo something, but to question the inherent value of that thing. And that's that's a pattern that I guess I've continued.
Yeah, I was going to say,
if we
when I go over the biography of the books, the articles, everything, and the, even just the two appearances that you've had on the our Busted Pencils show here, this has been where, you know, you've kind of been pushing people in the direction that they typically would say, wait a minute, I thought that that was common sense.
Right.
You know, and so all the way, so we take from 86 and at least here, then we take that all the way up to Schooling Beyond Measure and Other Unorthodox Essays About Education, which is a compilation of things. But I mean, so what? So I start with the beginning, kind of no contest. We're going to Schooling Beyond Measure. What's your conclusion in that group of essays?
Oh, gosh, I don't know if there's a unified conclusion. That's actually the fourth of four collections, sort of pseudo-books, I call them, you know.
Right.
Previously published material on a range of issues, mostly in education, but some about human behavior.
But this idea, I think, beyond measure, schooling, and which is...
Oh, yeah, the title essay in there challenges the idea of quantification. That's why I stop people who say, you know, if you don't use standardized tests, then how are you, or grades, how are you going to measure how well students are doing? And I always stop people and say, if you want to talk about how you can assess how students are doing, I think that's a fine question, and a reasonable, a legitimate one. But as soon as you frame it in terms of measurement, you have already loaded the dice by insisting that we reduce what children are doing to numbers. And as soon as you quantify it or insist on quantification, then you end up shaping the kind of teaching that's done for the worse, because you end up trying to teach the things that lend themselves to being measured.
Mm.
You know, it's a lot easier to measure how many times students use a semicolon correctly in an essay than it is to measure how many wonderful ideas are in that essay. So the more focused you are on data, the more trivial your teaching becomes. And so it doesn't mean we should never measure anything in life. You know, there are times when I want to know exactly how many kids are in the school, not just a lot. But in other contexts, we should question not just how we're measuring, but that we're measuring at all, and ask whether it makes sense to move toward qualitative assessments instead of quantitative ones.
Yeah, one of my favorite, or I should say least favorite, measurements that my child, that I actually pulled my oldest son, who's 17, out of when he was in kindergarten in first grade, was the Dibbles race to see how many non-words he could read in a minute.
Yeah,
nonsense words.
Nonsense words. I know.
Right.
Which is taken seriously. It's amazing. It's like
right.
somebody. It's like that's the sort of thing you'd expect in The Onion. You know.
Exactly. I mean, I got a report that literally laid out how well my son could read quote nonsense words in a minute, and on accompanying that was the goal for how many more he needed to get by the following month.
Well, that's the frightening thing, right? It's not just something silly and laughable, because if teachers are told that this is what matters, then they will teach to that objective.
Sure.
And literacy will be the worse for it. It will be displaced, because the point is to get them to correctly pronounce words that they don't understand, and in this case, literally, there's nothing to understand.
Well, there's nothing to understand. It goes back to what you said, though, too, from the and I was going to ask this, but you really went there with back to the first book, The Case Against Competition. I mean, this isn't just a rant. This is hundreds of research studies where you come up with this and lay this out. The same goes with this idea of pronouncing, you know, so many nonsense words in a minute. There's no connection in any research out there that says if you can do this in so many nonsense words in so many minutes that you're going to be some kind of reader. There's no research.
Right. But it's also important to ask the question correctly.
Okay.
There might be research that shows that a certain style of instruction raises Dibble scores.
Sure.
There might be research to show that there's a correlation between Dibble scores and scores on the standardized test. So people say it's a research-backed, evidence-based teaching strategy.
Yes.
But the question is, what question framed the research? What's the goal we have ultimately with respect to English language arts, for example? If the goal is comprehension, or if the goal is continued interest in reading that leads students to keep picking up books and thus acquire more proficiency at it, well, then that's the question you want to address. And of course, research is, if anything, going to find probably a negative correlation.
Yeah.
But the key point is not just to say, are there data? Is there research? The question is, what kind of research? What question is being asked? What's the dependent variable? What's the goal here?
Mm-hmm.
And a whole bunch of the essays, I think, in that book, Schooling Beyond Measure, and in previous books, come at that same issue in different ways by saying, dig a bit and ask, what's the goal here? What's the underlying premise or the question that we're trying to answer, so that we don't just get reassuring numerical responses to stupid or even dangerous empirical projects.
Right. Well, and you know, so all the way, so then to rewards, which is another one, this idea, you put it out, punished by rewards. And this is another one that I think people hit and go, well, what do you mean rewards are punishing?
Right.
How does that play out? I don't understand what you're talking about.
So one of the reasons that competition turns out to be not only unhealthy in its effect on our psychological health and our relationships, but actually counterproductive, which was for me the really surprising finding in that first book. Competition holds us back from doing our best, and it doesn't just make the losers bitter and resentful, it makes the winners less likely to perform well in school or in work when you're trying to defeat other people. You're not attending to the task in the way you can. You're not able to collaborate in a way that's effectively. But one of the other reasons that competition proves counterproductive is its status as an extrinsic motivator, as a doggy biscuit. If you do this well, if you write this poem, paint this picture, design this science project, perform this sonata in a good way, you will get a trophy, you will be the victor. And whenever you set it up that way, people tend to become less engaged with and interested in the task itself. It's now just a means to an end. So the more you set up a prize for winning in poetry, the more you destroy kids' interest in poetry. And again, I just want to say the winners as well as the losers. But it turns out that the outcome, the doggy biscuit, doesn't have to be a trophy, a result of beating other people. It can be a reward, not just an award. And that's what led to this later project, Punished by Rewards. Let's take the case of grades. The most destructive way to do it is to make grades artificially scarce, the top grades. So if you grade on a curve, doesn't matter how well everyone in the room does, only a couple are going to get A's.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only succeed if you don't. And I have this incentive now to triumph over everyone else. This is, I guess, immoral is probably the best word to use, not to mention destructive. So a teacher says, all right, in my classroom, there's not going to be any competition. If all the students do excellent work, all the students are going to get A's. No contest, so to speak. Well, that's clearly a step forward, but we still have a problem because we now have gotten rid of the competition, but we're still looking at extrinsic inducements. We're still looking at rewards. We're still looking at students who are not excited about the learning itself. They still see it as a means to the end of getting the grade. The grade is still a problem, even if there's no artificial scarcity. And that's the larger issue that I looked at work, at school, and at home, how rewards undermine excellence just as surely as competition does, and just as surely as punishments do.
Well, so this is just a glimpse of the work that you began and you've been working on and continuing to this day. And I wanted to give the listener of Busted Pencils a chance to hear just a smattering of this, because I'm really excited, because the reason we have you on to talk about this is the fact that we at Busted Pencils, through your generosity, are going to have a regular feature with Alfie Cohn, Cohn's Zone, where we will be looking at this body of work that you've been doing your whole professional life, and we're going to be answering these questions and looking deeply and bringing these back to light. And so, Alfie, are you excited? Are we going to keep things hidden from people, or are we going to hit them right? Are we going to come right at them?
Are we excited? I think the correct answer here is yes, I believe, according to the script you sent me earlier. In terms of how much you want to tease the topics, that's entirely up to you, since it's your show.
What an amazing, contribution for you to give us some time once every 2 weeks to really talk about these issues in much more depth and hopefully bring them to an audience again for people that may have missed the books, may have missed the articles, may have missed the appearances on television. You're going to get another chance, because we're going to bring back Alfie Cohn's work and we're going to look at it. So, Alfie, I appreciate your time today, this afternoon, and we will soon be in touch to begin Cohn's Zone. So, Busted Pencils listeners, be ready.
Thanks.
I wonder what Matt Damon's mom would think about a regular feature with Alfie Cohn.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
To my thinking, it's really fantastic. I was thinking about Alfie recently because I've used his books all the years of my teaching, and, you know, I know him because he lives in my community also. But, you know, he has a deeply profound wisdom about education and about human behavior, and he's written about parenting as well.
Right.
His really deep integrity and really deep understanding of really important issues of human behavior, like motivation and competition and cooperation.
What I really like is how, I mean, and I got introduced, obviously, like everybody, through a book first. I think the first book I read was one of his first books that got released, the competition book, where, of course,
it was No Contest.
Yeah, No Contest, released in the mid-80s, which, you know, of course, people freaked out. What do you mean, No Competition? But ever since then, you know, I've been reading the books, I've seen him, talked to him, and these things he puts out there. This idea that no contest, the case against competition, it seems like you should say, well, I don't really get it, Alfie, because I thought a little bit of competition was good. Aren't we all going for this? And boy, when you read it, you say, wow, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he uses, you know, his books are very research-based, and he uses lots and lots of research to back up the things he's saying, so it's not really opinion.
Yeah, it's not like the Busted Pencils blog that I write, where I'm just shooting
That's
off
just
my mouth, right?
Blowing off your mouth, right. He's actually got facts behind what he's saying.
Yeah, and not alternative facts either.
No. But Alfie used to give, at the Center for Peaceable Schools that I was part of for many years, we asked him to do a keynote every year for teachers when we were doing peace education and conflict resolution. And I really loved when he gave a talk, because I think it was then I could really understand, once there was question and answer and people would push him on things, how, that's what I'm saying, deeply he understood the effects on human beings of things like rewards and punishments or merit pay or grades. A lot of these things that are embedded in our American institutions and education, he's calling into question from the point of view of research and how these things really do affect human behavior. And some of his ideas about rewards and how they affect children are so profound for me that you can get, a lot of it has to do with, you can get compliance in the short term. This is an idea I think is very significant. You can get people to do things with short-term carrots and sticks, but on the long term, when it comes to what is it we're really looking for with human behavior, what kinds of children are we really hoping to develop, then we're looking for, okay, what kind of people are going to behave in the ways that we're hoping signify caring, loving kindness, cooperation when you're not in the room and when you're not giving them a reward? And how do you build those things in? And it's something he understands. And really, honestly, I don't think a lot of people do, or educators even, that they're much more tied to the short-term reward and the short-term behavior than the long-term goal of human development.
Thinking about that, I mean, we think about schools. I mean, you and I have seen the transition, the fight against the reform. I mean, the reform movement is largely based in that behaviorist model, the
completely.
You know, short-term rewards,
yeah.
quick standardized tests, whatever,
yeah.
you know, as soon as you can measure it, you can reward it, and you can move on, and it's just... Yeah, but you know, here it is again. I mean, 2017, and again, no contest, 1986 is
mm-hmm.
when he was writing about that. You know, the schools our children deserve, 1999, punished by rewards in the 90s, you know. And I remember reading those books then, thinking to myself, this is what I feel, and I love this stuff. And what mm-hmm. was amazing was then watching No Child Left Behind get passed in 2002, and
yeah.
thinking, this Alfie Cohn, because I hadn't met him yet, I hadn't had any conversations with him, must be flipping over in his bed, knowing that this is now national policy, things that he, as you said, put not just a position against, but large research-based evidence, arguments, books, saying this whole path that we're about to head down as a nation is wrong.
I have a chilling memory. I don't know if I ever told you this, but someone brought together about 10 Boston-based educators to talk about what Congress was about to do with No Child Left Behind. And Alfie was sitting right diagonal from me on the couch, and I was in a chair. And he said, what's coming down the road is, you know, an era, standardized testing that's going to be pushed nationally. And I can remember sitting there actually going into denial and thinking this can't be true.
Yeah, and boy, it was true, wasn't it?
Yeah, he has a good book on standardized testing as well. But the thing about his books, even though he's written them for decades, is that the deeper themes of all of his books do hang together, which tells you a lot about him.
Mm-hmm.
That he really understands these issues at a very core place, and that they tie together around, I think of it as, you know, human development and human behavior and learning. No, he's fantastic. I mean, I'm thrilled he wants to be on the show.
And
I'm really happy about that. He's going to add a lot of class to this show.
Thank you, because with you, there was always class that I needed. Now, the two of you, you know, yeah, thank goodness.
I thought you were going to say with you, there was always a little question.
No, well,
but then we get Alfie, we're going to really elevate.
We've got Matt Damon's mom, we've got Alfie Cohn. I mean, you're still stuck with me, but between the two of you and then, you know, me here and an occasional guest. Cohn Zone.
So he's going to be on just periodically, or is some regularity? Listeners might want to know.
There will be Cohn's Zone right now in every new episode.
That's very exciting. I'm really looking forward to hearing it.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
Now let's go across the pond and get friend of the show and director of Ireland's National Council for Curriculum and Assessment, Pat Sullivan's take on the question we pose every episode based on Alfie Cohn's book of the same title. Patrick, what are the schools our children deserve?
The schools that our children deserve are ones that completely accept them for who they are when they walk through the school gate. So they're not presupposing the types of experiences or the types of people that they're going to become. They are allowing children to grow into their education, and that schools are nurturing each and every child that walks through their school gate and through their classroom doors. It's also an outreaching place into the community, somewhere where families and parents in communities feel very comfortable in coming to. Is a welcoming space, a space where professionals are leading learning with the best interest of every child in the school community at heart, and at the heart of every decision made in the school. It has a very strong leadership aspect to it, a leadership that is completely engaged in the needs and the wants for, of their local community, and who do their utmost to meet those needs and those wants of their parent group, of their student body, and of their professionals who are working in the building with them. It's one that respects everybody in the school day, in the school building, not just the teachers, not just the children or the parents, but every member of staff, be it the bus driver, the janitor, and that real meaningful relationships are formed within that school building and environment, and one that makes meaningful difference to students' communities, that ensures that they grow up as well-rounded individuals with a self-awareness and an understanding of the world in which they live.
Patrick Sullivan was our featured guest a few episodes ago. You can hear that show and all past shows on demand at BustedPencils.com. If you're listening through Google Play or iTunes, be sure to rate us and leave a comment. Hey, and if we like it, you might even get a t-shirt.
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
She is a teacher educator, a critical scholar, a social justice warrior, aspiring social movement lawyer. She is also assistant professor at Trinity Washington University, and she is a board of director at Defending the Early Years?
Advisory board member.
Okay, advisory board member. Welcome to Busted Pencils, our activist of the week, Denisha Jones, back again.
Thank you so much. Happy to be back.
Denisha, what is this whole early childhood education, mastery learning? It's an upcoming blog going to be on Defending the Early Years. What early childhood education can teach us about mastery learning? What the hell is mastery learning?
Well, mastery learning is an old school idea that we do in early childhood education, which is the idea that children kind of work on activities. They put their time into it. They spend as much time, as little time as they want in the activity until they accomplish certain mastery objectives and then kind of moving on to the next one. And so what spurred this idea that two things happened, right? My last blog was what early childhood education could teach us about school choice because of the School Choice Week celebration. And then I was reading this article about mastery learning and how it's so great from a teacher's perspective. But I was dismayed that he connected to charter schools and online learning when this is something that we've already done in early childhood and really quality early childhood. So I decided to focus my next blog again on what can we learn from early childhood. And early childhood education can teach us about mastery learning. We don't need to turn to charter schools and personalized learning to learn about this because it's something that high quality early childhood has been doing for a long time.
Well, yeah. So take the, you know, the criticism that you put in this blog here is this idea of charter schools and, quote, personalized learning as substituting for real mastery learning. And so let's just take the substitute personalized learning, at least in this frame, why is it not mastery?
Well, the personalized learning used to be thought of as mastery learning, but today it's being framed by corporations as this new type of mastery learning, but it's all done on computers, Tim. So imagine your child gets to school and they sit into a computer station and they take mastery learning by clicking on a mouse and moving things, and it's personalized learning, it's mastery learning. They don't move on to the next activity until they've completed the first one, but it's through a computer. That's the problem with personalized learning today. It's not about children engaged with hands-on materials, and, you know, with a teacher guiding and supporting them or with their peers engaging with them. It's about a child sitting at a computer all day. So we hear about this, and it's like, and people think that's great, but is that really what we want for children? Yes, we want mastery learning, but does it have to come through a personalized learning vehicle? And that's what I was trying to question in the blog.
Well, there's a real contrast here. When you talk about, quote, early childhood mastery learning, all the examples in the blog of building tunnels and stuff like that, right? And mm-hmm. then contrast that to sitting in front of a computer and having, I don't know, word problems thrown at you, and they get harder or easier based on how you answer. And at some point you get a flashing star on the computer that you've, quote, mastered. And those two worlds are so different, because in one, in the early childhood, I can just see the kids with hands and stuff, you know, and really mastering something and conquering something, where on the computer screen, I just see these flashes. But then, you know, you also, though, talk about one of the early critics of, quote, mastery learning not done right our friend Alfie Cohn.
Yeah, so as I was writing the blog, I was thinking about, you know, because it is, in a way, the critique of traditional schooling. The article that I first referenced was written by a high school teacher. And I want to say high school teaching is very different than preschool teaching. So as a high school teacher, you might see some value in your kids spending time on a computer, which I totally get, even though I don't think it should be all day, every day. But, you know, we live in a technology generation. Yes, you know, kids should learn, you know, those computer skills are important. And I teach online classes for college students, so I get it. But then the idea that it's a critique of traditional schooling. And the first time I heard a critique of traditional schooling was when I went to a conference and Alfie Cohn was the keynote speaker. Mind you, I was in my first year of teaching kindergarten, struggling my life with those 23 kindergartners who had a first year teacher, me, trying to do these different things. And I had all these issues with, you know, setting up behavior plans that kind of reinforce different types of behavior by principals. Like, you need to set up a classroom reward system, get those kids in line. And I, you know, what I kind of read told me that's not the best way to go. And then I go to this conference and there's this guy up front and he's pretty much screaming at the audience about how all that stuff is wrong. And I was just like, whoa, this is somebody who actually gets it. Right. And
right.
So I went out and bought his book, The Schools Our Children Deserve. And I remember reading it and thinking, you know, this is something I can take back to my principal to push back against why setting up these reward systems actually diminish intrinsic rewards and intrinsic motivation within children when we reward them extrinsically. And so it did help. I did have to set up some type of system, but it wasn't based on, you know, extrinsic rewards and that sort of thing. So it was the first critique. And I think there are valid critiques of traditional schooling, but not necessarily to that. Then we have to go with charter schools and personalized learning and that sort of thing.
Well, I was going to, the next question was, so how did your principal react to you buying The Schools Our Children Deserve from Alfie Cohn and giving that to him? And so there was a little bit of movement there?
A little bit. So he said, look, you got to come up with something. Your kids aren't, you know, my kids were loud in the hallway. They, you know, we didn't walk quietly. I hadn't mastered all that obedience training required of kindergarten teachers. So there was some pushback, but I said I'd like to include some rewards that are a little less extrinsic. So one of the things that worked really well is, like, what can I reward the students with that doesn't, you know, isn't a material object? And so I did a lunch with the teacher, right? If you earned enough of our classroom bucks, you'd get lunch with the teacher. And that meant going outside to the park across the street and having lunch. And it worked like a charm because the kids were thrilled to have lunch with me, right? So I was giving them something that they wanted, which was more time with the teacher, instead of a toy or a pizza coupon or something that, you know, most of the programs were about. But I still had to entice them to earn that kind of thing. So there was a little pushback, but not enough. But she wasn't familiar with Alfie Cohn's work at that time. I don't know today if she is any more familiar with it. But she welcomes that I at least brought her some research evidence as to why, you know, extrinsic motivators are not good for really young children. But she still said, you got to do something because your kids, you know, they weren't as quiet as they should be in the hallway.
Well, so check it out, Denisha. So you mentioned Alfie in your blog. You talked to your principal. Maybe you're still, you know, acquainted with this principal, because I know he wrote that book in 99. You were back there teaching kindergarten. Here it is, 2017. And Busted Pencils has just talked to the man, Alfie Cohn, set up the idea. And Alfie is going to be a regular on Busted Pencils doing Cohn's Zone, where we're going to go back and look at all of these things that Alfie has been writing way before all of the traditional critiques. So the traditional mastery, check it out. What do you think?
I think that's awesome. I mean, so as you said it earlier, I'm writing for DUI. I'm trying to do a monthly blog, and it's hard, as you know, to be inspired to write something. But this whole concept of thinking, what can we learn from early childhood education, I decided that should be my focus. Because then I started reading through the book, Our Schools Are Deserve, and kind of thinking, I'm like, this stuff has been around for a while. People like Alfie Cohn were pioneers in challenging the traditional model of education, but not taking us to this privatization, right? He was also challenging privatization, but also saying traditional schooling wasn't working for most kids, especially low-income and children of color, right? So that idea has been out there. Like you said, 99. I was teaching kindergarten in 2003 when I was exposed to him and got the book. And now we see those ideas coming out again. But for the people in the corporate efforts, they're taking those ideas and they're twisting them into something that's not what Alfie Cohn envisioned. That's not what I envisioned for my kindergartners who were, you know, graduating high school this year, right? It's a total different thing that's happening. So how do we get back to our traditional roots? And I think someone like Alfie Cohn, who can go back to the original criticisms that we had and also critique it to what we're getting now, I think that's going to be a phenomenal idea for Busted Pencils.
I want to thank you again and remind everybody to check out the blog at Defending the Early Years, Denisha Jones. You can check out her new blog, What Early Childhood Education Can Teach Us About Mastery Learning. And Denisha, say hi to Alfie.
Hi, Alfie. So happy you're going to be on the show.
All right, Denisha, thanks so much for your time. We will talk again soon. Time now for our salute to legendary historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
Education can and should be dangerous.
My thanks to Alfie Cohn. We really look forward to having him as a regular guest on the show. Also, Matt's mom, Denisha Jones, Patrick Sullivan, and you. Hey, I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Let's keep busting pencils.
Log on to bustedpencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.